The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Case 18 from the Blue Cliff Record. Emperor Suzong asked National Teacher Huizhang, "After you die, what will you need?" The National Teacher said, "Build a seamless monument for me." The emperor said, "Please tell me, Master, what the monument would look like." The national teacher was silent for a long time. Then he asked, "Do you understand?" The emperor said, "I don't understand." The national teacher said, "I have a disciple to whom I have transmitted the teaching, Tanyan, who is well versed in this matter. Please summon him and ask him about it." After the national teacher passed on, the emperor summoned Tanyan and asked him what the meaning of this was. Tanyan said, "South of Shang, north of Tan. In between, there's gold sufficient to a nation. Beneath the shadowless tree, the community ferry boat. Within the crystal palace, there's no one who knows." So, there's something happening right now, right this moment, that we seldom consider. And that is, we are alive. And this moment is here. We can be observant of all the sensations and the awarenesses of our life, the sights and the sounds and the feelings of being human. And we can say we are alive and we have a life. And we can manage that life, we can navigate it, we can talk about it, we can complain about it. But the thing itself, that there is something rather than nothing, escapes anything that we could ever say about it with any certainty. This is what great koans do, though. They point to it. They point to it in a way that helps us see the maps that we have led out for our lives, the way we construct reality, the way we build it for our own sake and the sake of others. All useful constructions. And yet, the thing itself, ungraspable. A mystery completely here. We're sitting in the middle of it. If you've ever had the privilege of being with a young child, say 3, 4, 5 years old, you can see this, we call childlike wonder, right in front of you, playing with sticks, rocks, looking at the sky, looking at their body, exploring. It's all a great mystery. We call it childlike, but it's not childlike because it is innate to each one of us sitting in this room. But we eventually get educated out of it for our own good and for our safety. But we begin to know things. We begin to categorize things. and name them. And in that naming, those things lose their aliveness. We can see when we come to Sesshin, the things that we name through this rigorous practice can sometimes lose their grip. And when that grip on us loosens, it can possibly feel a little bit like vertigo. There's no place to stand. But immediately the mind comes in and labels it, categorizes it, holds it, and tries to grasp it. This is the beauty of the Sesshin in all these forms that we work with. They're simple and they're repetitive, and we get them wrong, but they're here. And they let us see what's here. Sesshin is this incredible gift, but really you can only see it as a gift when you participate. It's something else from the outside. There is a subtle and quiet assumption that we all have, that there's someone inside behind the eyes peering out at the world, an inner observer. But when we look close, and this is when we are sitting, we notice that there's just seeing, just hearing, just feeling. And we look for the inner observer, and it can't be found. We may realize that the world is not under observation, under surveillance. It's here. This is a profound understanding, but it's not something you can think your way into. It's not something you can use your intellect to grasp. You can only experience it in the moment, in here, right now, with this opportunity that we are sitting together, doing over these many days. There is a line in this koan that really struck me, and I've heard this koan many times before, but it really came to light yesterday during our Dharma talk. Within the crystal palace, there's no one who knows. This crystal palace, clear, clarity, transparent. And no one sitting on the throne. No one managing. And the opportunity is to see that the crystal palace, this incredible thing we call life, reality, this, suchness, whatever, is quite fine without a manager. But it's not something that can be continually experienced. We have to continue to practice, continue to show up, continue to be ourselves in the midst of all of it. there's a line that also comes up. It says, in between, the comment is, in between there's gold sufficient to a nation. This gold, a way of describing value, a way of pointing to something that, because it's all here, complete, it is valueless. This gold is the preciousness of our life. But you don't have a life, you are life. And so there is no place to stand, no separation. It's not something, not a doctrine, and not a philosophy. It's this experience of this, right here. It comes and goes. And I'm going to pause and pass it over to David Roshi.
So here in the middle of this mysterious thing we call life, deep in our sesshin, all of us on the communal ferry boat, crossing over to get here. Coming and going, wandering away, traversing the many realms that are your life. Everything we encounter is our life, and as Michael says so beautifully, this is not the life that we can stand outside and make sense of. The Buddha taught that the self and the world create each other. You and the world you live in create each other, and there we say subject and object, I here, the bird. But this close looking, this close examination begins to show us that that the song of the bird and you, or the pain in your knee and you, or the thoughts in the mind and you, are not two separate things. In Buddhist psychology, it's said that there are six senses, the normal five senses, seeing, tasting, touching, hearing, and one other.
Smelling,
yes. Yes, smelling. It, along with those five is the sixth sense of thinking. And usually we take our thoughts quite personally. We say, I am thinking. But looking closer, as Michael said, there's no way to find this one that we say is doing the thinking. You might say, well, these are my thoughts, but they're simply the thoughts that are arising in you. And I'm struck again and again as we do this work, and now so many of us have done this work for years, for decades, have given our life to this. And of course, all of us, whether this is your second sesshin or your 200th sesshin, makes no difference on this communal ferry boat. Because the journey is without end. There is no one there at the Crystal Palace, not even you. You don't get the gold ring and retire to Florida. You already have the gold ring. And here you are. There is no other place you could be. But because it is so very near, it is so hard to see. The momentum of the mind, the momentum of our life, of our karma unfolding, is fierce. And we gather together to support each other. So each one of us, both supporting each other, each one of us doing our best, being still in the middle of traversing the realms, the hell realms, the heavenly realms, the dull realms, wherever you go, we've all been, and these realms do not belong to you. Your work in Zen is not ultimately a psychological work, but encountering this aliveness, and as we encounter it, we see that there's no place to stand to observe it. And so if you think you can understand, if you think you can know, we're reminded again and again and again of this possibility and the necessity and the truth of not knowing. And we practice this not knowing. We practice, as Michael said, not having to manage. You know, such a gift. Our wonderful Tenzo, an assistant Tenzo, prepares the meals, and at the right time, the servers appear in front of you and offer you food. This food comes from the labors of beings past and present to nourish your body and mind. And what have you been doing except sitting on your butt all morning? And here it is. We give the food and we receive the food. Our bodhisattva vow is to receive what is here. Because we say, contrary to popular opinion, what is here is it. Whatever convoluted realm you are in, however many heads you have put on top of your head, this is it, not a hair's breadth difference. And so we confront the part of us that has such great faith that this could not be it. I've heard about it. I've heard about the Crystal Palace, and I'm going to get over there for sure as soon as I get out of this troublesome place I'm in. I'll get out of the troublesome place and I'll go to that place. Well, that place, the Lotus Land, the Crystal Palace, the life of awakening, as Hongzhi said, is what is here from the very beginning. We all have, you all have the wondrously bright light of life. and in the silence, you meet yourself. And we say again and again, I say again and again, we are cultivating some kind of friendliness. We are practicing what happens if we don't pick and choose. Right? We're so trained in the sorting business, in the comparing business, and we have these minds that are just incessantly comparing and judging, and then wanting to be appreciated for telling us that we're an idiot, or telling us that we're so wonderful, finally we've seen it. All of these arisings are simply thoughts coming and going with no substance. So what are we heading for if we can't hold on to it? What are we doing if the one who knows what we're doing cannot come along? We are completing the self. We are discovering the self. We are revealing the self by meeting what is here, by meeting our life, by moving toward as best we can. And the wonderful thing that is possible here in Sesshin is that we can get so confused that we really can't direct ourselves. I know for me, I've been on Sesshin where I can barely remember how to breathe. What am I supposed to be doing here? And this confusion is not a sign that something is wrong, but rather this confusion is part of what arises when we see that the foundation the mind makes, the foundation of understanding and reasonableness, stands on nothing. Clouds in the air, what we thought we could depend on, opinions of ourself, opinions of others, a sense of what this Zen path is. Now I understand. And sometimes we do. Of course, there are moments the sun comes in through the window and reflects in my eyes and I smile and am grateful. Or walking outside, or taking a bite of food, or lying down in bed. So many moments, and what we're doing is not mysterious. I would say what we're doing is not even mystical, but rather touching something real, so real and everywhere. Revealed this gold between the rivers, the gold to the north and the south and the east and the west. The gold of being alive has never been hidden. Not one of your steps leads away from this gold. Already accomplished, already whole, and you alone in your life, because each one of us is alone in our experience. Uchiyama Roshi says we cannot exchange. You cannot have another life, there is no possibility of that. There is no other life. One of the wonderful things about Zen is this encouragement for all of us to meet the life that we have. because there is no other life to meet, and that when we move into this life, when we eventually give up what we think we should be, and this giving up, as we say, is not something that you can decide, you know, a check mark, I'll give up my opinion, but it gets ground down. These hours of sitting, we simply fall apart. We are worn down slowly and quickly, and we don't quite know what's happening. And here it is, isn't it? The 18th case from the Blue Cliff Record. Emperor Su Zong asks National Teacher Wei Zhang, "After you die, what will you need?" The National Teacher said, "Build a seamless monument for me." The Emperor said, "Please tell me, Master, what the monument would look like." The National Teacher was silent for a long time, and he asked, "Do you understand?" The Emperor said, "I don't understand." The National Teacher said, "I have a disciple to whom I have transmitted the teaching, Dan Yuan, who is well versed in this matter. Please summon him and ask him about it." After the National Teacher passed on, the Emperor summoned Dan Yuan and asked him what the meaning of this was. Dan Yuan said, "South of Zhang and north of Tan, in between there's gold sufficient to a nation. Beneath the shadowless tree, the community ferry boat. Within the crystal palace, there is no one who knows." Thank you. So please sit comfortably and rearrange the zendo for our Dharma dialogue.
So this is an opportunity to ask a question about our talk, mine or David's or both, or something that's come up in your practice or in Zen in general. So I will call them and the three of us will answer. David.
I was thinking just now as you read the koan, the beginning, and then David read it at the end. The National Teacher's explanation of the seamless monument, kind of just silence. And then, since the Emperor didn't get it, didn't understand, he said, you talk to my Dharma heir, Tan Yuan. And you'd think the National Teacher probably knew this fellow pretty well. He knew he could use really wonderful words. And so this is very poetic, the images and the metaphors and that explanation kind of that Tan Yuan made are really wonderful. And but I end up, at the end, it doesn't tell us if the Emperor understood that. And I kind of was left with the feeling that the better explanation is the silence.
Better or worse. So there's the comparing mind, weighing options,
deciding this or that, making a ledger. That's what minds do.
And I think too, you know, this is true in our lives as Zen practitioners as well. We don't know what's going to do it. You know, what's going to open our hearts, what's going to open us to the spacious reality that we're ignoring because we're lost in our thinking or whatever. It could be silence. It could be something somebody says. And I think, you know, there's a lot of, in Zen teaching, especially as you study or hear about the koans, you hear about these old teachings, or you just have to observe what we're doing. We're throwing a lot of stuff against the wall and seeing if it sticks, right? And over and over and over again. And then when something does stick, it's clear. Mm-hmm. Clear to the practitioner, clear to the teacher at that point. So for you, you know, the silence really meant more. But that's arbitrary and random, really. I agree with what Michael just said. Good, bad, better, worse. Just keep exposing yourself. We have to keep exposing ourselves to this.
And I think, too, of the ripeness of the time. Mm-hmm. So wasn't a bad thing that the emperor didn't understand. It wouldn't have been better if he understood, right? And so each one of us is ripening. We're all apples on the tree, all stuck. And at some point, we may fall off the tree. Who knows? Maybe some bird comes and eats us. We don't know. So this ripening, as Michael said, is beyond our management. And many of us, maybe most of us, think we should be ripening a little quicker than we appear to be. But in some way, we can only follow, and that this is perfectly right here. Chad.
Thank you for the talk. I was really struck
Plural.
By... the goal. And when it first settled in, it was sort of like I had this vision of just vast field of everybody here is glimmering in gold, and then it gets bigger. But as I sat with it more, I realized I was also creating this separation of everybody else is value of gold, and here I am not part of that. And so that was quite a revelation for me to see this pattern, right, where it's always thinking, I see the value of all these things, right, but looking at myself is a practice that I need to keep working on. So thank you for the pointer.
I alluded to the valuelessness of it, because if it's all valuable, it has no value. It's beyond value. It's priceless.
That was what pointed the separation of that I was creating for myself in that.
Yeah.
And it all sort of evened out.
And I think this is one of the ways the mind works, that we can see things outside ourself, and we feel separate from what we see. I think it's a Yunmen koan. He said, all of you have a light, but if you try to see it, you cannot. So we kind of want to stand outside ourselves and, well, I'm this, I'm that. But I like what you're saying. And I think Melissa said this yesterday to someone. If you can see it, you can only see it because it's already here. And there's some way we have to have faith. Well, this doesn't feel like gold, but, you know, maybe it is. Yeah.
Anne.
The pragmatist here. I've been thinking about how much we think of mind and world, the mind creating world, but your mind's part of the world. It's blood and neurons and all that stuff. And I wonder if it's hardwired in that you can ever see anything without immediately referencing all the other things that are seen. That it's part of the neuron. You see blue and you, there's sky there. And I don't know if you can ever see certain colors without there being a reference that was made by how all the little neurons stick together.
I think it is an automatic thing for many of us. Just like you automatically defined yourself as the pragmatist. Some people go, what? Who? we do this. It's this automaticity that we want to see clearly so that we can be free. There is an opportunity to really see the sky and not immediately think sky, blue, right? And it, if you think about it, you'll just get in your own way. But there is an opportunity here to experience things as they are without this interference. It's not that the interference isn't part of who we are. You're absolutely right there. But maybe there's another way to live with all these elements that keep glomming onto each other. When the stickiness starts to fall away, it's just this. Sky is extra, blue is extra. And you can imagine it and think, oh, I want that, and then lost again, right? But this is part of the practice. As we maybe take a walk out in the garden, as we're sitting and smelling the rice cooking, the mind says, rice. Oh, lunch. Oh, I wonder what's going to go along with it, blah, blah, blah. But even before that, just that word rice, what if it was just... I can make that noise because I'm a little congested. But right? Wouldn't that be something? And I'm here to tell you, yes, it is something. But don't get lost in... Oh, it's the separation again. You know, it's just what Chad was saying. So amazing to see how we separate ourselves. Well, okay, so everybody else is filled with gold, but not me. I'm the great exception. This is what we do. And it's part of being human. And the Zen path is showing us something bigger than that. Not necessarily better, just bigger. Yeah. Thanks.
Struck by this and what was said earlier about, look, we can't decide like, oh, I'm done now. Like, I'm gonna cast this off now, because then that is just the self creating another veil, and noticing how in like when there is that. Like just this, like how quickly like the mind rushes back in to say, oh, that's there it is, you did it. Let's hold on to this, let's keep this going, and then in that it's just
yeah.
So that's super, feels very present for me.
And you know the rushing in is it too. it's that we're trying to separate ourselves and observe it and report on it and pocket it, put it in our pockets. And it can be just, oh yeah, I am there again, doing that again, and here it is. And, yeah.
Yeah, oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and being stubborn enough to do it again and again and again and again, and then do it again and again and again, is how we open our hearts. Because clearly you can't do it, and clearly I can't do it. But if we stick with it, if we come back again and again, it somehow does us. And when we can leave enough space, then it's none of your business about if it's going to change, or when it's going to change, or how. You know, that's the management business. But what is your business is your deepest vow, your greatest love, and doing, heading into what is totally impossible again and again. This is how we live a meaningful life, I think. Yeah.
I was struck this time, not surprisingly, and I thought I admired that the emperor could just say, I don't know, because I think that's how I'm feeling too. And that, you know, and yet we're yet, well, if it's just this, then we, you know, yes, maybe we know. But I was thinking the other thing about what came after what Anne said was just in this funny realm, it's not so funny, but I'm old enough that, like, these opinions that you have, like someone walks towards me and I have to say, are they male or female? And then because of the time that we live in, we're being forced to sort of just say, oh, maybe that, like, maybe gender is this construct that it's not helpful. I don't know. But so I just kind of, that's just what brought to me about how, you know, we like to define things, but we don't know, and trying to be open to say it's not about us, too. Maybe that's kind of out there. Sorry.
Reassociation. Well, but seeing how the labeling, you know, in this particular about gender, we can see, and all kinds of other labels. Oh, here's a young person. Oh, here's a old, you know. And I think the seeing of it is what we're working on here. Because, you know, all of the resolve to say, I will never make an opinion about anyone again, doesn't work. So noticing that, and then I think staying with it long enough, and I hear this in you, to actually be curious. Well, so that's the label that comes up. But what is here? Who is this? And who am I meeting? And so that kind of curiosity doesn't have to wait for all the labels to vanish, right? But can operate. And I guess a little bit like, you know, so the mind, the opinion, the comparison and all of that goes on. Can't get rid of it, but can still determine what direction we're going to head in. You know, we can solidify around that, say, well, I know what this is and that is. Or we can say, huh, I wonder.
Yeah. Great. Even the judgment around, oh, I can't believe I mislabeled them, or I got it wrong, or that sort of thing. That's it too. That's what David was just saying about to notice. That's what we're noticing too.
I keep thinking about a time when I was at the Provident Zen Center with David's teacher's teacher, Sung San, the Korean teacher. And I don't know if you were with me or not, but it was a women's conference, you know, right? So in those days, 40 years ago, the big gender issue was women actually are people too. It's probably hard to imagine that that was true. But that still happens. Women are dismissed routinely as not being equal. And any woman in my group here, anyone who identifies as a woman knows this. And there were teachings in early Buddhism that women couldn't become awakened. They couldn't become Buddhas, you know, because in early Buddhism you become a Buddha. In Mahayana and Zen, we're already Buddhas, so it's not an issue. So somebody raised their hand and said, so what do you think, Sun Sanin, his honorific title, what do you think about that teaching that women can't become Buddhas? And he said, oh yes, women cannot become Buddhas. And there were hundreds of people in the strip network. There was a collective right at that time. Oh, talk about mislabeling. and And he kind of looked up brightly and he said, "Oh, but also men cannot become Buddhists." and it was just like that. We had like 100 people lit up this thing that it's a little bit like we were talking about the sky and the blue and the rice, and that there's a way of holding on to these definitions of self that is that can get in the way. I definitely identify as a woman. There's no question in my mind. And that's not the thing that defines me, right? It can't be. And so all of us together are whatever we call ourselves, the pragmatist, the idiot, the one who can't do anything right, the one who's really got it together, whatever label we're carrying around and holding on to tightly, ultimately, it's gonna go. And it can't go too far because it's useful. So it's like both at the same time. So watch it. I think that's what you're saying, Anne. That's what I'm hearing you say. Yeah. Just to notice it. Just to notice the holding tight is enough for the work of liberation to start to begin. But it doesn't mean getting rid of. It's also, that is rice. And it's a good thing to know that that's what it is. And that is the sky. And it's a good thing to know that that's what it is.
Thank you. I think we can restore the zendo and come back to our practice.